Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's RIVERFRONT, one word, for $20 off.
What is going on, everybody? This is the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. I am Joe Farsing. That's Greg Niemann. Greg, what's going on this week, man?
Living the dream, buddy. Living the dream.
Did you see the Jake Browning game happening? Did you ever in your life feel that the Jake Browning experience was going to turn out that way?
I'd love to say yes, but no.
You could have made a hell of a lot of money if you... I don't know what prop bets were in terms of under, you know, you adjust the line, you know, figure if he's, you know, put him at plus what, 1,000 for him going over 350 yards or whatever, that would have done, that would have done really, really well. Before we get going here, everyone, again, if you guys are watching on YouTube, subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/riverfrontcincy, smash subscribe, smash like, all that fun crap. If you guys are watching us on YouTube, subscribe to us on whatever audio podcast so you guys can get it in your feed. If you're unable to watch us, we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, pretty much anywhere you can get audio. Also, check out our website, riverfrontcincy.com. We have awesome college coverage there, actual articles written by actual people who write actual cohesive sentences. There's a reason Greg and I do this on camera because we are not English majors. I can't even spell my own name right, so I'm not going to leave it up to the editors to fix that crap out. So, all right. Where was everybody for the Jake Browning game? The most random off the, you know, the Bengals have talked about they love Jake Browning. They think that he's capable of doing things. And then we saw the Pittsburgh game, and they dropped Jake Browning into the Joe Burrow offense, and it went about as well as you would expect. I mean, he was okay. He threw one interception, probably could have thrown three or four, held on to the ball way too long because he wasn't able to make the quick reads, and pass rush would close on. But the defensive line or offensive line did a decent job that week, but he had, what, four or five sacks against because he just wouldn't get rid of the ball. So they scrapped that game plan and then did what Greg and I have been yelling about for about the past 2 months, what they should have been doing some with Burrow. And especially after he went down, these are things that, I mean, I remember staring directly into the camera, talking right one-on-one, heart-to-heart with Zach Taylor. Do more rollouts, under center game. Do things to give Browning fewer reads, have him cut the field in half. Run the ball more, use Chase Brown. Well, they did all those things, so apparently he actually took it heart-to-heart. He wanted to try to think that he was smarter than us. Didn't work. This week he's like, okay, we'll go with those unpaid professionals at the Bengals show. Did all the things to make things easier. Did roll out. And again, they still operated mostly out of shotgun. I'm like, they're not going to scrap their entire system. But he gave Jake Browning easy throws. And it succeeded. 32 of 37 with two drop passes. Chase dropped an easy pass. Tyler Boyd dropped an easy pass. 86% completion percentage. One touchdown in the air. 76-yard bomb to Chase on a go route on blitz, and one rushing touchdown. Where do we start on this? Where do you start on his performance?
I mean, I thought it was amazing, absolutely unbelievable. I start with the things that jump out to me is the easy throws early. I thought were genius, even though the short screens were going for a yard, two, three, sometimes negative one. That's all fine and good. You start getting the defense thinking, okay, we got a backup quarterback that's not going to throw the ball vertically. You're going to keep things close, keep it simple. And then as you get to the second quarter after a couple completions, you start to open it up a little bit for Jake Browning. I kind of consider it like a really good shooter getting an open layup to start the game or a free throw. And all of a sudden you get a good shooter with a couple made baskets and things kind of open up for you. The other, and I think, you know, we have to give Zach Taylor some credit because I thought the game plan was super efficient. But the other part of this that I think is going to get overlooked, but it should not, and I've been yelling about this all year, is you have to force the run game just to keep things balanced. So you look at the Bengals, Browning was 32 of 37. They had, as a team, they had 31 carries for 156. So they carried the ball 31 times. That's, you know, and it wasn't like Mixon was gashing them. You know, it wasn't like they were chunk playing them in the run game. But when you just consistently run the ball and make them cover these things, then you made them cover the short passes, and then you went from there. And I just thought everything built on top of itself, and it all worked out in the Bengals' favor. And I give Jake Browning a lot of credit. I give Zach Taylor a lot of credit.
Yeah, let me ask you this. In terms of the quick, easy completions, like the screens and everything like that, yeah, everyone's complaining because I was getting kind of frustrated. Like, can we throw the ball past the not even past the sticks? Can we throw it to the line of scrimmage? You know, need to get something going. And they made it to midfield both in their first two drives before turning over on downs and then a missed field goal. But how important is it? Is it more just a thing of confidence, just getting someone in a rhythm to get those easy throws, to get those completions? Like, you know, especially for someone who's this is his first start since the Rose Bowl when he was still at Washington. Is it that important just to get everything flowing that, you know, even if it's just tiny, you know, short gains?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It just depends on who the quarterback is. If it's Burrow, he's going to come out with confidence no matter what the case is. Jake Browning doesn't necessarily have confidence built in on the NFL level yet. So I think the easy throws for him are super important. You know, if you're talking about Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, they can start 0 for 5 or 0 for 6 and, you know, try to throw the ball vertically, and it's okay when they fail. They'll come back. They still have built-in confidence from experience, where Jake Browning doesn't have that. So I thought it was – I think you almost have to start that way. If you don't have that confidence as a young quarterback, you're cooked. I mean, you are done. If you want to watch quarterbacks that don't have confidence, if you want to watch them play, go watch Zach Wilson and the Jets, and you'll see what I'm talking about when you know, there's no confidence in what you're doing. Zach Wilson has no confidence. He doesn't let any ball just rip. He doesn't let it rip ever. He just doesn't feel good about it. Where Jake Browning, after the first quarter, completions were basically, he was designated where to throw the ball essentially on easy throws, or he checked out of a run for an easy throw. So you knew where you were going with the ball. After that, he really got in rhythm and you started to see his confidence. So for Jake Browning, I thought it was, I think it's a must. You had to do it.
And that's, I mean, he's someone who doesn't exactly lack confidence anyway. I mean, you hear, I mean, he's not, he doesn't come across as, I don't want to sound negative, he doesn't come across as arrogant as Burrow does. And I don't mean that, like, Burrow just is supremely confident, and it's not as much as a braggart as it, like, there's, you know, there's confident and then there's up here. But I mean, Browning still has a very, you know, level. He's like, I've won football games before. Like, this isn't, you know, I know how to throw a football. But yeah, I mean, just to get it going. And again, he realized and remembered that he's got Jamar Chase out there. He's got T. Higgins. Spread the ball around really, really well. And again, Bengals got Chase Brown involved. 9 carries, 61 yards. Longest run of the season for the Bengals, 31 yards on a carry. Mixon, he was, I think, more effective than his numbers ultimately came out to be. He was 19 for 68, 3.8-ish yards a carry. End of the game, fourth quarter, and overtime, they started to get a little conservative, and his, you know, run, he was getting 2 yards, no yards, whatever. So before that, the numbers were looking better, at least in terms of average and efficiency. Do you think this is the split? It's pretty much 2-1. Mix into Brown. Do you think this is the split that we're probably going to see, or do you think, and my hope is they incorporate, keep Brown, try that again, keep handing the ball off to Brown more and more, not so much to take over the number one spot per se, but just to get even more of a 50-50 split, because he showed he's ready. Like, he's got quick feet. He's got the juice to get away.
For me, I mean, I love this split. I know you would like to see a little bit more, but for me, I love the Chase Brown split. I don't see any reason to bring him back in his rookie season and, all right, let's get him 15 to 20 carries a game. I don't know that that's necessarily needs to be the case. I think if you can bring Chase Brown in for 9 to 10 carries, 8 to 10 carries in really positive situations. So, you know, he carried it 9 times for 61 yards, which is incredible. I think you would love to keep that and just keep his, you know, his confidence level high, while letting Mixon take the brunt of those carries where you're going to run the ball on 3rd and 1 and pick up, you know, you hope to pick up 1.5 or 2, and it's a really tough run. I think let's just put Chase Brown in the best situations we can right now, get his you know, confidence up and let him stay positive, and then kind of move on from there. I don't think there's any reason to go too much too quick. You know, it's like the first time you eat steak. You don't need a 28-ounce. I mean, you'll be all right. You can take a little 12-ounce steak and you're gonna be fine. Now, once you're a pro, you're getting the 28-ouncer every time. I mean, you're gonna go for it.
You're taking the those old time steakhouses that had those like 72-ounce challenges. You had to eat a towel the size of a house cat and all the sides and everything in under an hour, and it's free. Otherwise it's like $150 or something. I would absolutely take that. I can put down some steak. I'm not going to lie.
See, but you've been there, done that before. First time in, you weren't going to dive into the 72 ounce. You were going to take your time.
I'll be honest. I'm actually surprised in how much that they did incorporate him, especially earlier in the game. I think down the stretch, and again, maybe it was more just relying on Mixon, because Mixon, his ball security has never really been in question. He does not fumble the ball much. And knowing that, yeah, you might not be, you're losing out on someone who's going to turn that 2-yard gain into a 12-yard gain by being able to bounce it outside in order to restart his feet. But they know what they're going to get. It's more, you know, you can game plan around that. If you need, you're not going to give the ball to Mixon on 3rd and 7, expect him to pick it up. But if it's 3rd and 2, you know he's going to, even if he doesn't get it, he's going to end up handing that ball back to the official, and so they can, you know, restart the play on 4th down or whatever. So again, it was awesome to see him get a chance, and awesome to see him actually take advantage of this thing too. The last thing you wanted to see was him get the ball 8-9 times and end up with 25 yards, and then it's, well, yeah, this guy has the ability, but he's coming away with this, you know, the same efficiency, or, you know, less efficient than Mixon's getting. So just more weapons the better. And yeah, I never wanted them to get rid of Mixon altogether in terms of utilizing him. You need multiple backs. You need backs with multiple styles. It makes your offense more varied. It makes them something else. I would actually love to see, and I don't know if this is something that they do because they've never really done it before, but come out with a two-back set. You can split one out wide if you want to, but I mean, it's come out, God forbid they come out in a power set with two tight ends and two running backs. You split one of them out, and then defense has no idea what personnel to bring out there. You still have Ja'Marr Chase, so they're going to end up giving a spring the safety over to his help. It's more players who can touch the ball, more players who can make impacts with it. It's, if you utilize them, that just makes you so much more dangerous. Going on about Ja'Marr Chase, 11 catches, 149 yards, one touchdown. The bobbling, juggling catch, that was amazing. Like, first off, he shouldn't have bobbled it. Like, it was an easy catch, but the concentration, I mean, he almost caught it three different times to be able to, while the defender is bringing him down, I mean, he was getting tackled as he's still bobbling to itself, and to be able to tuck it away clean, that wasn't even a review. I mean, it was, he tucked it away clean, and okay, let's just move on. And then the celebration on the 76-yard bomb, he turned around and basically walked backwards into the end zone. He said he felt like being a little evil on that, just a little taunt the defense without getting a penalty for something stupid. That guy's so good. They gave him 12 targets. That's what you need to do. Keep feeding. He's one of the top three wide receivers in the entire game. I mean, it's Tyreek, Justin Jefferson, and Chase, and I don't know in what order, but keep feeding him. Good things are going to happen. You're still going to throw the ball plenty of times to get it around to your other weapons. Higgins had three catches for 36, getting back into the mix. I guess my question, and we had said this before the Steelers game, kind of put a sour taste in our mouth. Can they make the playoffs? Like, we had written the Steelers game as a possible win, going to lose to the Jaguars, and then Indy, you know, Vikings, Steelers again. Like, those are winnable games. They won, I think, the hardest game of the schedule. I think the Jaguars right now are a more difficult team than better team than the Chiefs. Or at least they're playing a lot better right now. Trevor Lawrence went down late in the fourth quarter, so it's not as if they were playing the entire game with C.J. Beathard.
Right. Oh, no. I mean, that was the Bengals won that game. The Trevor Lawrence injury, you know, whatever aside, the Bengals played a full healthy Jaguars squad for 85% to 90% of the game. I mean, that's a win in a big time spot. But yeah, I think the Bengals can make the playoffs. You look at Indy. If you somehow get past Indy this week, Minnesota's kind of in shambles a little bit with Josh Dobbs. Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, Pittsburgh, you know, I feel like if the Bengals were to be matched up against Pittsburgh tomorrow, then the Bengals would probably be favored even after just losing at home. So, you know, a lot changes in the NFL in a week. And the Bengals are the prime example of that after losing to Pittsburgh by six and then bouncing back and beating Jacksonville, who was clearly one of the top four teams in the AFC. So, yeah, I mean, the Bengals absolutely can make the playoffs.
Yeah, if Jacksonville had won that game, they're the number one seed in the AFC. How crazy is it that Lamar Jackson, of all quarterbacks, is the only starter still healthy in the AFC North?
I mean, I think for the Ravens, they better cherish this moment because they're, you know, for the rest of Lamar's career, they're going to be the ones opposite of this situation. They're going to be the ones with an injured quarterback. This is why I've always said you need pocket passing in the NFL. You don't really want the full-time running quarterback. So embrace it, Ravens fans, because it's not going to happen very often. It is kind of mind-blowing the amount of quarterback injuries I feel like the AFC went from the deepest conference maybe of all time to now. You know, there's so many top-tier quarterbacks that are hurt that it's kind of wild. I don't know that we've ever really seen this kind of downfall at the quarterback position in terms of injury.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at Jets have Aaron Rodgers out for the season, although they designated him to return, which is absolutely crazy, and then said they're not going to bring him back. Well, yeah, you're not going to come back from an Achilles injury in 4 months, especially someone who's 40, 39. Like he's almost as old as I am. Like, the body doesn't recover that fast unless you're taking some crazy illegal shit. I mean, obviously, Pittsburgh's still in playoff contention. They're without a not even very good quarterback to begin with, Kenny Pickett. They haven't ruled him out for the rest of the year, but it doesn't look good. Cleveland's without Deshaun Watson. Joe friggin' Flacco started. And actually, numbers didn't look terrible last week. We'll get into the division here in a little bit. Jacksonville has Trevor Lawrence with a high ankle sprain, is what they officially diagnosed it with. He's probably out, I'm going to say conservatively, 2 weeks. So, I mean, he's going to be out a few weeks at the least. Indianapolis is 7-5, but they've been playing without Anthony Richardson for a while. And then you've got the AFC West, which really doesn't matter because it's Kansas City and then a bunch of teams that just aren't very good. But it's crazy when you're just scanning at the records for the playoff picture. Bengals are right now in the 10th or I guess the 10th position for playoffs. They're tied with Buffalo and they've got the tiebreaker. There are 11 teams at 500 or better in the division or in the conference. And there's only one truly terrible team, and that's in New England. I mean, Tennessee is next to last, and they absolutely steamrolled the Bengals when the Bengals had hobbled, but still had Joe Burrow and everyone else. So I don't think anybody's like, yeah, we thought that this was going to be full of juggernauts, yeah. And because of injuries, I don't even know if anybody's even good. Is Philadelphia and I would say Philadelphia, but they got steamrolled by San Francisco, who the Bengals handled. Who's good? Who's going to win? I have no idea who the good teams are right now.
I think there's two teams in the NFL to me that are above everybody else, and that is San Francisco and Dallas. I think those two teams are the two best. And I know leaving Philly out is probably going to, you know, some people are going to throw their hands up at that. I just don't think it's their year. But you look at the AFC, I mean, Baltimore, we know what Baltimore is. I mean, they're good. I don't think Baltimore is a great football team, and I think they're very beatable on any given day. And then you check out the rest of the AFC, Jacksonville. I mean, you just won in Jacksonville on Monday Night Football. The Kansas City Chiefs have a 0% chance to go to the Super Bowl. They are incomplete at best. The fact that they're 8-4 is a touch of luck. Kansas City's not a good football team. They're a pretty good defense, but their offense is kind of subpar, to be honest. So I don't think there's a ton of good teams in AFC. I think when you get into the playoffs, I think it's going to be a total crapshoot. But if I had to pick one team to come out of the AFC right now, I would probably lean Miami.
I think ultimately it depends on who's going to have the healthiest quarterback. Ultimately, I mean, quarterback play is what determines who, you know, is really what determines who wins in this league in, you know, in 2023. Their offense, yeah, they struggle when Miami struggles when they play legitimate teams. But that offense is just so explosive when everything's going in the right order. And they seem to be healthy right now. The running backs are all good. Devin, I can never remember how to pronounce his name. Achane? I don't know. He's damn good. I wish the Bengals would have.
Yeah. I always say Achane, so I don't know.
Okay. Not to be confused with A-Train, Anthony Thomas of Michigan and shoot the Bears. I forget. Did he play anywhere besides the Bears?
That's beyond me.
Figure he probably played with the Ravens because the Ravens have had literally every somewhat journeyman running back go through there in the past 5 to 10 years. It's insane. They always have a good run game, but the names that go through there, go there. They all play well, and then they all get injured. So maybe stop signing or maybe stop signing contracts with them because you're going to blow an ACL or an Achilles at some point.
Well, I think they continue to sign running backs because that's the only people that will sign there. name one free agent wide receiver that is signed with Lamar Jackson, because I'll wait, because there ain't none. T.Y. Hilton decided to end his career and stay in Indianapolis rather than go play with Lamar. So nobody Odell wants Beckham. To play with Lamar.
Odell Beckham.
Okay. Well, I mean, if somebody offers Odell Beckham, what did they give him? $17 million a year? That guy had no choice. He's like, are you kidding me? He right. couldn't believe it. He was just hoping for a contract from somebody. And they gave him all kinds of money. I mean, that was crazy.
Yeah, that's still... Yeah, I know that, and he's looked pretty, looked pretty well, but still has some juice. But that was a risky move
not for
a guy
$17 million.
No, absolutely crazy for a team that's still going to run the ball a lot more, especially when it gets later in the season. So whatever, that's a Baltimore issue, not a Cincinnati issue. So I'll take a quick look around the division.
Yeah,
Ravens are 9-3. They were off this past week. They get to face the Rams at home. Rams are 6-6. What do you make of the Rams? Are they a product of a not very good NFC and just picking up wins against mid teams? Or, I mean, Bengals played them and they looked like they had talent, but Bengals handled them.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the Rams are a product of a bad NFC, an up and down NFC. I don't think the Rams offense is very explosive like they have been in the past. Cooper Kupp's definitely lost a step, the injuries have caught up to him, and Puka Nacua's kind of taken that role over. So I don't think the Rams are a great football team by any means, though.
No. Yeah, I mean, they've been incredibly streaky. Lost three in a row, lost to Pittsburgh. They absolutely got steamrolled by Dallas. Got hammered 20-3 by Green Bay, and then turn around, beat Seattle, who's kind of free falling a little bit. Beat Arizona, who's either froggy or terrible, depends on the week. And then they beat Cleveland pretty handily, 36-19 this past week. So who knows what they're going to get? It's at home in Baltimore, so I don't think Baltimore's losing that game. But it wouldn't surprise me if it's tight close to the end. Sean McVay's a good coach. I can't really say anything one way or the other. He's a good football coach. There's a reason so many of his assistants go on to get jobs elsewhere. So second place,
yeah,
Browns.
No, go ahead. You're good.
I was going to say Browns in second place. They lost, as we said before, 36-19 to the Rams. Flacco, his numbers were decent. I didn't watch the game, so I can't really say whether he looked like he had a handle of the offense. You expect him to get more comfortable the more reps he gets, but he's still Joe Flacco, who is the spitting image of, as the kids say, mid. I mean, he's still, you don't want someone you signed off the street throwing 44 passes in their first start, but that's what happened.
I did watch the game. I caught enough of the game for Browns, for the Browns and Joe Flacco. I can't believe I'm saying this. Joe Flacco looked really good. He looked really good. I mean, he was ripping it out. And when he – you could tell the plays that he knew, because when he knew the play, you could see his experience take over, and he knew where he was going with the ball. And when he could just grip it and rip it and sling it, I mean, dude was cutting him up. I was, wildly surprised at how good Joe Flacco looked. I mean, he really did look good. And I, of course, am not, I don't like to say good things about the Browns, former Ravens, none of it. But he did. He looked very solid. I was definitely surprised.
See, ultimately, it doesn't matter because they lost. So, he could have looked great and they still took the L. I'm still kind of hoping. I think the Browns are going to make the playoffs. Their defense is too good. So I'm kind of hoping that they're able to have it kind of sealed off before week 18 versus the Bengals, because that means Myles Garrett's going to sit. He's already dinged up. They've got so many impact players out. There's no chance in hell that he's seeing the field if there's, if they don't need that game, or even if they're out of playoff position by that point, he's not playing. He's going to need surgery. I forget, it's shoulder. I forget what exactly his shoulder, whatever, but, everyone says they want to face other teams at full strength. I don't want this guy to be out. That guy kills. He's the single reason. Bengals have struggled against the Browns in the last handful of seasons because of one player. because of Myles Garrett. The other 52 guys on the roster, doesn't matter. Bengals would beat them by 3 touchdowns. Myles Garrett wins games against the Bengals one hand because he's so good, impacts the game so much. Bengals are a pass-heavy team, and he just absolutely feasts. Doesn't matter how good or bad your offensive line is, he's going to line up in front of your weakest spot, and he's going to pick them apart.
Totally agree. Ditto, yes.
Yeah. Again, everyone, I want to face a team at full strength. I want my team to win. Like, it's nice to have someone being at full strength and you absolutely boat race them, but ultimately, I want to win. I don't really care if it's against you, if it's against, you know, Little Sisters of the Poor. I just, you know, I want my team to win. Steelers are
seven. I hate the argument about full strength that people, I want to play them at full strength because it's just nonsense. When you get to week 14, 15, even week 10, I mean, nobody's full strength. And the stuff that you don't know about when a team's not full strength, like the Bengals having Cam Taylor-Britt out on Monday. You know, do you think Jaguars fans were worried about Cam Taylor-Britt being out? Hell no. But is that a big loss? Absolutely. And every team has that. So the full strength thing to me is just nonsense. I think, you know, when you play an NFL team, it's going to be a tough game, and it's hard to win NFL games. So when we're here, we play to win the game. Just win games, baby. Win games.
Right. I mean, you're rarely facing everybody at 100% anyway, so then you don't need to apologize. Like, everyone was trying to poo-poo the Bengals' Week 17 win versus the Ravens last week, and then their last season, and then their win in the playoffs because it was against Tyler Huntley. It's a win. They have 46 players dressed every game. They all get paid NFL contracts. You don't take, like, no one's going to take any win against the Bengals away because they beat Jake Browning instead of Joe Burrow. We don't need to apologize for beating teams with backup quarterbacks too. So onto the Steelers, the worst offensive display in the world. They lost at home 27-10 to the Cardinals. That's rough. Again, the Cardinals, they look froggy or they look terrible. There's really no in between. They don't play a lot of games to where they battle to the very end and they're going to lose by a field goal. They're going to lose by double digits, or they're going to win, or they're going to surprise somebody. Kenny Pickett is injured. He's out for this week. I guess they're counting on him. They're expected to return the following week, week 15. I don't know if it really matters whether it's Mitchell Trubisky or Kenny Pickett. They're both just not very good. Yeah, they threw it all over the field on the Bengals, but that's an indictment on the Bengals secondary than it is on anybody else. We talked before we came on the air, and we'll post this up here before Sunday or before Thursday night football. They play the New England Patriots tonight. Over under is set at, what did you say, 30 and a half?
30 and a half is the last I saw, yeah.
I haven't looked. I guarantee that 95-97% of all the take is being put on the under. You could put the over under at 15, and I would probably put my car on the line. I'd put my pink slip on the line for that.
Lowest over under in the NFL in 30 years. 30 years. That's incredible. I mean, you're talking about games in the snow, games with in a blizzard. I mean, torrential downpour, wind going 50 miles an hour. All those games over the last 30 years had higher over-unders than the Steelers and the Patriots tonight. I mean, what a game this is going to be.
So let me ask you here. We'll have a mid-off. New England just came off losing 6-0. 6-0 against the Chargers. Yep. Not a lot of people are making the argument that Justin Herbert belongs in that top tier quarterback this year. Again, I like Justin Herbert. I think he's got so much arm talent, but it has yet to actually fully display it. But the Steelers offense, Patriots offense, like I'm trying to look, the Patriots haven't scored over 7 points in the game since November 5th, so it'll be a month when they scored 17 against Washington and still lost. And Iowa Hawkeyes offense. What offense is going to put up the most amount of points?
Well, I think this is a trick question because I actually think that the defenses are going to put up the most points. I think somebody's going to get a pick six, and that's going to be the difference. I think the difference to me in this game is going to be what defense scores and what defense sets up the most scores, because ain't nobody driving the football. The New England Patriots are the first team in the history of the NFL to give up 10 points or less in back-to-back-to-back weeks and go 0-3. They haven't given up more than 10 the last 3 weeks. They're 0-3. I mean, how do you explain that? 10. 10 points. That's amazing. That is amazing. I bet the under on the Chargers-Patriots game last week, and I turned it off about midway through the second, maybe early third quarter, and started watching other games because I knew I couldn't lose. The over-under was like 40-something points, 6-0. I'm the easiest bet I've ever made, easiest one I've ever made.
Who's going to throw more passes, Bailey Zappe or Mac Jones?
This is such a good question. Hold on, Bailey Zappe or Mac Jones?
Yeah. Zappe is the starter, but does he make it through this game? I think he's going to get killed, and Jones will come in with an injury.
This is a really good question. I guess I have to go Mac Jones, because, you know, New England's not going to run the ball. It's such a tough question because Ramondre Stevenson's out. So they're, you know, normally they rely on him. He's out. So
Zeke.
Okay. Pump the brakes.
Yeah, we lost Greg here. Okay, Greg, you're back.
Yeah, I just don't know how many times the Patriots are going to be able to run the ball. I think they're going to have to, at some point, they're going to have to throw some passes out there. So, I mean, I'll take Mac Jones throwing more, because I think the Patriots will probably be losing, because I think they want to lose at this point. So I think they'll be losing, and then late in the game, I think Mac Jones will pick up some of those late throws after Zappe's either benched or injured.
They're incredibly injured. Again, the Patriots weren't going to be a good team at all this year anyway, but Stevenson's injured, Devontae Parker's injured, DeMario Douglas, Juju Smith-Schuster. I mean, they've got five receivers that are hurt. Their left tackle's out. They've got some guys in their defense that's out. Christian Gonzalez, their fourth-round draft pick. I don't feel sorry for them, but they're beat the hell up. And yeah, it's going to be an awful game. I'm not going to spend 1 second of my Thursday night. Like I said, I've got a house full of sick people. I'm probably going to be in my room reading or watching The Simpsons or something. I don't care. I've got better things to do with my time. I can run headfirst into a wall and would have a better time watching that game.
Yeah, I can promise you it's not going to be number one on my list of things to do tonight.
I'm going to keep track of the score just to make sure that the fingers crossed that the Steelers are going to lose. But yeah, it's a whole bunch of mid. Looking forward to the Bengals week 13, 1 o'clock against the Indianapolis Colts. Right now, they're actually a 1-point favorite. They opened Monday morning. They were a 3-point dog. Immediately after the Monday Night Football game, they were a 1-point dog, and now they've actually, I'm not sure who CBS uses for their spreads, but they've got them listed as a 1-point favorite right now versus the Colts. On offense, Colts defense, especially their run defense and tackling here, they're pretty porous. They give up a lot of yards. Do you think the Bengals are going to lean into that more, or do you think they're going to try to keep similar script as last week?
I don't think when it comes to the Bengals offense, to me, I don't think it really comes down to, you know, Colts are bad on run defense. I think the Bengals need to keep the same philosophy they had last week. We need to, at the end of the game, I don't care what happens, at the end of the game, I need to be able to say, Jake Browning, okay, 32 of 37, forget the yardage. I want, you know, high completion throws, let him get cooking. And then I need 31 carries. I need 31 rushes to 37 passes. I don't care that the Colts are terrible on defense, you know, against the run. I really don't. I think no matter what the Bengals do, they have to run the ball. They have to force the run. If you force the run, everything comes off of that. And I don't think you need to lean on the run more. I think you just need to make sure you lean on it as much as you need to, enough. And then, you know, even if it's not working, you have to force the run game. And we saw that against Jacksonville, and it clearly helped, in my opinion.
Yeah, and again, like I've stated many times, I'm not a huge heavy run guy at all. But when you've got your backup quarterback, and again, Bengals are never going to be a one-for-one, you know, complete split on their, you know, rushes to passing attempts. Technically, they were, how many sacks did he took? He took 2 sacks, and then 2 were scrambles, so it was 30 or 29 carries versus 41 passing attempts. And I think that's probably a similar split. I think it's a good chance this game turns into a track meet for that matter. But and what I want to see, again, I'd like to see him, almost like to see him bring Chase Brown out first. Get them kind of on their heels, then bring Mixon in to be a hammer. Again, I would almost like to see like a quarter split. Chase Brown in the first quarter. Joe Mixon, just to soften him up in the second quarter. Come back out with the lightning of Chase Brown. Fourth quarter, use Corey Dillon as the sledgehammer. Just, I mean, that defensive line, there's going to be a lot of plays. Bengals had 86, some high 80s, mid to high 80 snaps last week. I think there's a good chance that they hit that this week. Again, not even needing overtime. I really think it's going to be a high-scoring game. If you're going to run. Bengals have, like, the Bengals offensive line is better run blockers than pass blockers. They ran a lot of screens, and I'm actually more okay with that now. I think I would like to see him utilize Chase Brown more. There was the one screen that Mixon had a really nice game. You saw Cordell Volson and Ted Karras, good 25, 30 yards downfield. It was actually impressive to see Cordell Volson be blocking 30 yards downfield and still make the tackle. He tripped Mixon up on the play. I'd like to see Chase Brown, see him get the ball to see what he can do. Mixon almost looked like he was jogging. I think part of it is he was, you know, just trying to be patient, keeping the offensive line in front of him. But I just want to see somebody go. Bengals haven't had somebody that just step on the gas and go in a while. I hope, you know, again, a lot more pre-snap movement. Misdirection. A lot of their runs relied on misdirection, which was cool, counters and stuff like that. Boots, naked bootlegs, getting him out of the pocket. There was the one play that Browning made. It was a naked boot over to the offensive left, and he turns around, and the end is right in his face. He stopped on a dime, flipped his hips, and made a nice throw to Mitch Wilcox, picked up 13 yards on a play that I think the week before he'd have taken a sack or thrown it right into the defender's hands for, you know, either an incompletion or an interception. I hope that, you know, that they're not going to try to get too cute. I'm completely fine with the two trick plays they ran last week. I think the one to Tyler Boyd, yeah, it ended disastrous, and everyone was like, well, Browning was in a he was in a rhythm. Don't take the ball out of his hands. That play was actually drawn up and blocked up beautifully. If you look at the play, if you look at where the offensive line was for Joe Mixon, if Boyd doesn't throw the ball right to Josh Allen, which I don't know what he was looking at, but I think Mixon would have gotten 30, 40 yards on that play. There was nobody on that side of the field. Everyone, the coverage was trailing Chase across the field, and he gets past the linebackers, and then he's gone. So I don't mind the cute stuff, but don't outthink yourself. You know, don't try stuff that don't go back to just lining up every play in the shotgun, no movement, anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, if, you know, think about all the stuff we've said previous weeks about Zach Taylor and the offense, and we really don't, you know, really have a game plan after the first two drives, you know, scripted drives. I'm not going to now bash him for drawing up trick plays. I think, you know, I liked his aggressiveness. Yeah, it didn't work out on that one particular play, but you know, the defense still has to defend those things. Yeah. So I commend Zach Taylor for making us multiple and making us more difficult to defend.
It also gives them something to think about. If you run something with similar motion, even if you run the exact same play and toss the lateral to Tyler Boyd, he's got two options. Like there are three options. He can continue the play as it's supposed to, throw it back across field to, for screen pass to Joe Mixon. he had Ja'Marr Chase. If he wanted to, he could have hit Ja'Marr Chase. He had plenty of space underneath, or he could have just run the damn thing. So anything, it gets the defense thinking. They start to see that motion, is that there's that oh crap moment. If you can create any hesitation, any thinking by the defense, you're winning that rep. Even if it doesn't work, like that's a rep that as a play caller, you've won that down.
Well, and I completely agree. And I think you look at what the Bengals are trying to do with some of their quick screens to Ja'Marr Chase, where think about how many times you see, and this is really just exclusively for the NFL because nobody else is good enough to do it. But when you throw a quick screen out to the edge, how many times do you see a defensive end that comes and makes that play for about 3 or 4 yards coming from behind the play and just destroys your receiver from about 3 or 4 yards, where now he sees that screen on film, they're going to be saying, hey, don't forget, they like to run a trick play here that's possible. So now you slow that D-line down on that screen pass, and now we get Ja'Marr Chase into that Oklahoma drill that Zach Taylor was talking about. We get him into that Oklahoma drill in space with no D-lineman chasing him from behind. It seems like a small thing, but again, that's the NFL. The difference between a step here and a step there is the difference between a 2-yard gain and a touchdown. So for me, I think it just makes the defense have to defend multiple things, and you slow down everything from the pass rush to their pursuit of the football, all kinds of things. I think it's just beneficial in more ways than people actually realize.
Yeah, and it's kind of similar to baseball, when hitting's about timing and pitching is about disrupting the timing. It's the same matchup, whether it's the defense trying to disrupt the offensive timing or the offense trying to mess up the defense's timing so that they're reacting instead of working off of instinct. And if you can get them on their back heel, it might not work that first play. It's going to work later in the game because they're going to see something that's going to trigger in their memory, and they're going to be reacting to a play that they think they see, and you've got that play set up from something that you ran earlier in the game or a couple weeks ago or something that you've been working in practice for 3 years. They said they've been working on that throwback play to Boyd for a couple years, and they finally put it in. So I'm all for gadgets, but I just like seeing goofy shit happen on the field, whether it's triple passes, double passes, just weird handing the ball off to an offensive lineman. I think it makes the game fun. Even if it doesn't work, if you're not going to be good, at least be entertaining. And that's, I like entertaining shit. Even if the defensive lineman intercepts it and runs it back to the five.
Yeah. Well, and just one last thing about the offense throwing, going back to that trick play and the quick screens. When the offense is throwing those quick screens, especially early in the game, you think about, what people don't do is they don't put their mindset in the actual player's mindset. So let's say you were a defensive end for Jacksonville on Monday night, and the first 25 plays of the game for the Bengals, you're lining up for a pass rush, and you come and you're coming on the pass rush, and you're exploding off the ball. And before you take two steps, ball's out. Well, I mean, as a pass rusher, you get a little deflated. I mean, I'm throwing up this much energy, and I'm not even getting close because I know the ball's coming out. So then in the third and fourth quarter, is your pass rush, are you still going to be quite as motivated? I just think all of that plays a factor, which, if you looked at Browning, he had plenty of time to deliver the football. I thought he did a good job. I think the screens early are a product of that because as a defensive end, I mean, it's tough to line up 70 times in a row, never have a chance at doing anything. And then on play number 71, you got to line up and go 1,000 miles an hour, and this is your one chance. I just think that's a really hard thing to expect from just humans in general. So I think slowing down that pass rush with those quick screens was a big thing as well.
Yeah, not even whether it takes them mentally out of the game or deflates them. These guys are running sprints. They're going to be worn out. I mean, you take so many dropbacks and the quarterback's going to end up the defensive line's going to end up just exhausted by the end of the game. That's when you lean on the run to lean on a bunch of tired bodies. They're going to be going well into their depth and bringing in lesser players, or they're going to be keeping their starters in. These guys are going to be gassed when it comes, especially when you get to the. Okay, we got you back. And now, flipping it over to the defensive side, what do you see? What do the Bengals need to do? What can they do? What are the Colts going to do?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the Colts, if you really look at an offense that kind of fits into what the Bengals want to do defensively, which is kind of, you know, make you drive the football. We're going to give up yards. We're going to look for turnovers, and we're going to try to, you know, make negative plays while allowing you to pick up some first downs, but hopefully try to, you know, keep you from the end zone. I think Indy kind of fits into that mold for us, you know, pretty well. Minshew is going to, there's going to be opportunities out there for turnovers. Minshew to me is a poor man's Brett Favre. You know, he's going to come out, he's going to sling it around. And he's, you know, he's not going to apologize for his throws later. So I think you will have opportunities defensively for some turnovers, and that's where the Bengals defense thrives. I think the one thing you have to make sure of is no big plays for Indy, which goes into the Bengals philosophy, which they don't really give up a ton of big plays. You know, they try to limit what you're doing and then make you run as many plays as possible to give us a chance at negative plays defensively. So the Colts also have, I hate to say this, but they have Alec Pierce, the second rounder. Can't remember where he went to college. Somewhere unimportant, I'm sure. But, you know, he's a big, strong, athletic receiver that I don't think gets enough credit. I think he's really a pretty solid receiver. I'm sure they'll try to target him deep a couple times. But I think if the Bengals can just avoid giving up big plays and you make Indy, who's kind of, I don't want to say an incomplete offense, but they're kind of here and there. Where if you can just make them run a bunch of plays, eventually bad things are going to happen for them that are going to kind of derail their offensive drive. So I just think, to me, it's really just make them run plays. If they're going to score a touchdown, I want it to be a 12-play drive. I don't want to see a 5-play drive. It's got to be a 12-play drive if they're going to score a touchdown. And I would challenge Indianapolis to put together 12 straight plays of, you know, success. Because I think they'll struggle in that regard.
That's kind of the downside of the Bengals defense, and especially, I mean, Cam Taylor-Britt's out until they didn't put him on season-ending injured reserve. I think there's a chance that he can be back by week 17 or so. So he's going to be out for the next handful of weeks. They're giving up a ton of chunk plays, and that's again that's Alec Pierce had 3 catches for 100 yards last week. He averages over 15 yards a catch. He's inside. I think more of their number 3 receiver, but he, you know, he's a downfield threat. He's tall, he's fast, and he can leap out of the gym. I mean, he was a volleyball player. I mean, ridiculous athlete. Gardner Minshew is absolutely going to put the ball in harm's way. He's played 11 games, so 10 plus coming in for Richardson. 21 turnover worthy players. I mean, that percentage is 5.3% that he's putting the ball in harm's way. So there's going to be plays made for the defense. It's whether or not they can come away with them. Bengals had an interception go through their hands that turned into a touchdown. Crazy play Dex Hill needs to make. I mean, it's hard to say, like, you need to make interceptions. You get your hands on the ball, it's a pass broken up, but ball went right through his hands and then right to the Jaguars receiver. I mean, rookie who got his first career catches, I believe. But they need to come away with turnovers. Surprisingly, with the team that has Jonathan Taylor and Zach Moss, they're not a very good running team this year. I know Taylor had some injuries. Obviously, there was the contract situation. Then he had some injuries. Moss has been a little more efficient. I don't know about more efficient, but he's been a little more effective at getting more yards per attempt. He's 4.5, whereas Taylor's at 4.1. I think they split them pretty well. They also, but they're, you know, they're not, I mean, they're somewhere middle of the pack in terms of yards and yards per carry and things like that. So, but again, Bengals have turned mediocre running teams. You know, Devin Singletary, you know, ran for a buck 50 on them. So I think absolutely keeping the big plays to a minimum and yeah, make them grind it out. I don't see that they are going to be able to grind a drive out. They're not going to do what the, what the Ravens and the Browns do to 15, 16, you know, play drives to take up 7, 8, 9 minutes of the clock. They, you know, they're a run, you know, fast break team. Like they want to score in 4 or 5 plays, you know, big, get chunks and then, you know, and then punch it in from, you know, if they even get to the red zone, punch it in from deep. So I think it's all things considered. I mean, Bengals played 4.5 quarters last week, and they gave up less than 400 yards, which is for them pretty decent, but there were still plays and there's still big chunk plays. A nice screen that they threw to the running back that in end of the third or end of the fourth quarter to let him drive down and kick the game tying field goal. I still like the names on the back of the jerseys on the Bengals defense. I think that their starters are solid. I just worry about, you know, again, when they're bringing Zach Carter in, when they're bringing in Joseph Osai, Cam Sample, how much those guys, like, they're still not getting a ton of pass rush. It's, I think the Bengals will win because, I mean, Paycor Stadium is such a huge, huge advantage. And Gardner Minshew, yeah, he's a backup, but he's a backup. He's got a fair amount of starting experience, and he's not a kid. So I don't think he's going to be intimidated by the environment. But this, again, Bengals should win. I think they'll win, but I think my confidence is only slightly better than my confidence for the Bearcats beating Xavier on Saturday. So what do you think? Where do you think? How do you think BM's going to go? We'll put it that way.
Well, I think there's one thing the Bengals have to do, and we've talked about their run game being, you know, what it is. I to me, Indianapolis run game is boom or bust. I think if you're the Bengals, I think you got to take one away. Take the run game away early and then force the ball into Minshew's hands, and now let's play. And I think if the game goes that way for the Bengals, I think it can end up, you know, very favorably for the Bengals in a somewhat of a shootout. Is kind of how I see it going, the Bengals being ahead, and then Indy just have to, you know, throw the football. And I think that'll put the Bengals in a good spot where they can force turnovers, you know, sacks and field position kind of things, where they get some drives where they start in good field position. But I think it all starts with the Bengals have to stop the run early. I think you'll be able to tell who's going to win this football game by, do the Bengals stop the run in the first quarter? If they stop the run early, everything falls into the Bengals' lap from there. If Indianapolis is able to chunk the Bengals in the run game early, watch out, because now they have everything off of it. It's an ease game in front of Gardner Minshew. They have two-way options. They can run. They can throw, play action. So I think it's just vitally important for the Bengals to stop the run. And if they do, I think it'll be a really fun game to watch. If they don't, I think it could get ugly. If you let them start to roll on the ground game, they do like to take advantage. So I'll take the Bengals in a somewhat of a shootout, you know, 27, 20, 21, 24, you know, somewhere in that range. And you know, make Gardner Minshew throw the ball to beat you. And I think they'll be able to force enough turnovers to hang on.
Yeah, I do kind of am a little bit concerned that we are assuming that Jake Brown we saw on Monday night is Jake Browning that we have for the rest of the season. He still has only 2 starts. One was not great, and then one was lights out. He's still a backup, but they're playing a lesser team. They're playing the Colts at home as opposed to playoff team and one of the better teams in the league on the road on Monday Night Football. We didn't mention that was the Bengals' first Monday Night Football road win since 1990. I mean, that was...
I was born in 90.
That was a long time ago. I was 10 years old in 1990, and that was a long, long time ago. That's when the Reds hoisted a trophy. That was the last title that this city has ever seen for any major sport. I mean, it's unfortunately crapping the bed.
I'm aware. I've seen nothing, Joe. Not a thing. I was born Cincinnati. Done. Nothing.
So what you're saying is it's not the Bo Jackson curse, it's the Greg Niemann curse.
100%. It is entirely my fault. Ever since I've shown up, Cincinnati sports downhill. I mean, it's
so do we need to make a sacrifice? And is it you, or do we need to find someone else? Like, I don't, I like it. I don't want you to go, but is that what we're saying?
Yeah. No, I think the timeline I've given myself is still 40. You know, if by 40, you know, we're not getting something done, maybe we let Greg go. You know, we figure something out. I'm willing to do what it takes to win a championship. But I think, you know, give me some time. I'm still working on some front office issues. But once I get to 40, yeah, I mean, maybe it's time for me to go. I'll move to Baltimore.
I appreciate your commitment. I thought of it this way when I was a lot of talk with the Reds. I mean, it's hot stove season is going hardcore for the Reds. They've made three moves, bring in Nick Martinez, Emilio Pagan, and Jeimer Candelario. I was 10 years old when the Reds won the title. So it will be 34 years, you know, when World Series next year happens, it'll be 34 years. And another 34 years after that, I will be 78 years old. There's a strong likelihood, given my genetics, I'm not going to be on this side of the dirt when I'm 78 years old. It was nice seeing that FC Cincinnati they are truly a Cincinnati team, because they shit the bed in an important game. They were up 2-0 at half. They're the best second half team in the league. Gave up two goals in the second half, and then in extra time, they gave up the game winning goal to, again, another shitty team, shitty rival team that wears yellow and black. Hell is real derby, and I'm willing to whatever sacrifice they need to take, so long as it's no one in my house. Like, I'm willing to sacrifice any of you guys. I'm not going to sacrifice like my wife or kids or anything. But even if it's just, you know, I won't say I'll settle for Xavier, because first off, Xavier basketball, they're not very good this year, and I'm not a Xavier fan, so I wouldn't settle for Xavier winning a natty, but something. And NKU, Miami winning a national, just something for Southwest Ohio to say, hey, guess what, we're the best at something for a small moment in time.
It's truly amazing. I mean, when you think about some of the losses we've had to endure, I mean, just in recent memory, this MLS loss for FC Cincinnati, gut-wrenching, absolutely gut-wrenching. And then you think back to the AJ McCarron Bengals. I mean, you have Jeremy Hill running the ball when you could probably take a knee, you'll lose that game. I mean, it's just, you think of some of the ways that they've lost, in where the ESPN predictor would say 99.9%. And Cincinnati fans, and we know this to be true because we are them, you just never feel safe. You really don't. You could be up 11 with a minute 30 to go, the ball, and you still are like, they're gonna mess this up somehow. I mean, that is what Cincinnati is. You can't explain it, but when you've seen it for 30 years in a row, I mean, you just know something's about to happen, and it always does, and it's just amazing. I just want one time to be like, got him. It didn't happen. We got him. I just want to see it one time.
Maybe there is a Nick Foles type run for Jake Browning and the Bengals. Again, their defense kind of makes it, no matter what magic he can pull out of his rear end, the defense kind of makes it hard to envision, but we'll do something. My prediction for the final score, I think it's going to be, again, like you said, a shoot. I think it might even go higher than that. I'm going to say, I kind of like last week's 34-31. I'll say Bengals 34-31. Evan McPherson hits a, maybe not walk-off field goal, but field goal late in the game to seal it for them. Before we get out of here, one last thing. Quick prediction for the shootout on Saturday. UC 7-0 versus the 4-5? Are they 4-5? Not a very, like...
I want to say 4-6, but you might be right.
Any predictions for Saturday's big crosstown shootout tilt?
I am normally one that sides with Xavier, so where my allegiances lie, I would lean Xavier, but I really don't have a dog in the fight. But this year, I will take the Cincinnati Bearcats, and I think it'll be in convincing town showdown which to me is about, you know, anywhere from a 7 to 11 point win. I think UC's just a little bit better just generally, and I think Xavier's going to have a hard time overcoming that. So I'll take UC by either double digits or close.
I kind of see this as, I think UC's a lot better. I think they can score from anywhere on the court. They've got some absolute shooters. CJ Frederick coming back home to Cincinnati. He was 5 of 6 behind the line, or behind the 3-point line last game. I'm not sure if Simos Lukosius is going to be back. He was the guy who got hit by a car last week on campus, which I didn't know that he was cosplaying as an NPC on Grand Theft Auto. he's another 6'8 shooter. UC has a bunch of guys who can score. They don't have a go-to scorer, which might bite them in the ass when it gets into Big 12 play. But I'm also a UC fan who has seen UC go down twice when they were number one in the country. It doesn't matter how good, how bad UC is. Doesn't matter how good, how bad Xavier is. Xavier, I don't know why they seem to just get up more for the game. It's not a matter of UC just kind of overlooking it because they've got, you know, their eyes on bigger prizes. Xavier has been ranked, you know, top 15, top 20 program the past handful of years, and they're still making the plays when it matters most. I mean, last year I think was important that a really good Xavier team barely eked out a win versus UC. Again, UC is the more talented team. UC is the better team. I see it as either UC is going to roll by 20 points or Xavier is going to win a tight game. I would love to, you know, be confident and be, oh yeah, UC, you know, Xavier's lost 3 straight games at CentOS Center. It's hard to objectively say they're going to lose a 4th straight, considering UC hasn't won there since 2001. I would love to see it. I'm a gigantic UC fan, but I'm not going to make a pick, but I think it's going to be a Xavier close win or UC by 15 to 20.
See, and where you say Xavier close win, this is where I think it is. I think Xavier will keep it close because it's just, that's kind of how the rivalry works. Xavier's always going to be in it, even when they're horrible. I think Xavier keeps it close for about 35 to 36 minutes. And then I think when you start getting into what you were talking about, Big 12 basketball, UC not having that go-to scorer, I think that's where Xavier's really going to struggle, is late in the game when you get down to possession for possession, where it kind of, you know, is one side, other side, and who's going to go make the basket. I think Xavier's really going to struggle in that scenario, where I think UC, although they don't have a necessarily go-to scorer, I think they're going to be able to – they have a better offense in general to where they'll be able to manufacture points, where I think Xavier won't be able to late in the game. I think the final 4 to 8 minutes, I think, will be the entire difference in the game, and I favor UC in that.
I would love to see it, but again, I'm not – I've lived through too much. I like UC as one of the, I think as of now, 15, last 15 undefeated schools in America. I think that they're going to end up, I was hoping that they might be a bubble team this year. I think they're going to comfortably make the NCAA tournament. Maybe an 8-9 seed, something like that. But I'm never comfortable. I'm never confident going into the shootout because I've seen too much, man. Make it sound like I'm an old vet who's witnessed some crazy stuff in, you know, in NAMA or something like that. But I've seen too much crap to be confident.
Well, again, straight back to being a Cincinnati fan. You just know.
You expect bad things to happen. When things are going, when the light shines brightest, that's when you expect someone to pull the plug.
Yeah.
All right. Greg, on that very upbeat final thoughts topic, any final thoughts before we get out of here for the weekend?
Our friend over there, Ben Brown, they ended up falling in the state championship, but had a great season. So congrats to them. They had a great run. So real happy there. Super excited about the Reds. I didn't even realize about the Heimer Candelario pickup. I didn't see that one. That must've been super recent. So
it was at 1:30 last night or so, somewhere okay. After 1 o'clock last night that it came out. It was word that they were working out a deal. I still don't understand how everything is going to fit out because it's another infielder when they've got 10, but be interesting to see because there'll be a trade. So I'm curious to see who goes. But
I love that pickup. I think that dude is so underrated. I love that pickup. So I I like where the Reds are headed. I think if they get Dylan Cease, I think maybe that move kind of corresponds with the Dylan Cease move. So I like where the Reds are headed. I think they're Nick Kroll, two thumbs up. He's getting the job done right now.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Again, it's they'll have a lot to talk about on the Mothership, Riverfront the Reds show, and on Late Night Reds with Tim and Ben. Ben will be back this week. Tim had to go slumming and find some schmuck for a co-host on last week's episode. The best he could find was me, which means he was absolute dumpster diving. Again, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/RiverfrontCincy, youtube.com. Wow, com, not dom. What is wrong with me? youtube.com/RiverfrontCincy. Join our family, family.com/RiverfrontCincy. Go check out our website. We've got awesome college basketball coverage. We've got everything covered. We've got the Reds. We've got FC Cincinnati covered. A lot going on everywhere. A lot going on with the hot stove. It's a fun-ish time right now. Again, I'm back to being cautiously optimistic about the Bengals. Again, I don't know where the season's going to go, but let's have fun with it. Guys, have a good weekend.